Welcome, and thank you for tuning into the Graceland Church podcast. Our mission is to follow Jesus and love our neighbor for the good of the city.
Amen. Good morning, church. How are you guys doing? Can we thank our worship team for leading us and blessing us? Come on. Thank you, guys. If I haven't met you yet, my name is Nathan. I'm honored to be one of our pastors here. It's great to have you at Graceland Church. I am going to introduce a friend of mine, a very special guest speaker. His name is Chris Songson. We met in our days in Southern California. My wife and I were church planners out in Los Angeles for 8 years before we came out this way about 8 years ago. And one of the guys that became a mentor to me out there is Pastor Rich Guerra. And he still serves as one of our church here, external overseers. So he helps give a covering to our church and good counsel. And Pastor Chris Songson has also been a dear friend and an encourager and was a youth in Pastor Rich Guerra's youth group years ago in Southern California. And there's just many layers of connection and fun history in the kingdom of God, which is how it is serving the Lord the longer that I go. And I'm not going to say too much about what he does because he's going to share about that today. He's going to share an incredible message that's going to encourage you and challenge you. He's also going to share about a ministry that he has that's one of our brand new Kingdom Builders partners. That'll be a little bit at the end of the message. He is a fun, loud personality, and he looks kind of like Seinfeld. Let's make him welcome. Come on up, Chris.
Appreciate you, brother. Love you, man. Well, good morning. Oh, come on. You guys slept in, so you should be wide awake. You're the late service. You should be wide awake. Let's try that again. Come on. Good morning.
Good morning.
Come on. Let's have some fun today. I always think that church should be the best place to be all week long. I think when we're in God's house, there should be a huge smile on our face, and we should lean in and have an amazing time. And you're here anyway, so you may as well have a good time while you're here. And but it's so awesome to be able to be with you. My name is Chris Songson, and it's such an honor to be with you. And I got to tell you before we even continue anymore, I do a lot of traveling. I know a lot of pastors all across the nation. And I want to tell you that you have an amazing pastor, and Pastor Nathan and his wife. Would you do me a favor and give them a giant hand and thank them for the way they serve? We are beginning a partnership of rescuing churches. And I know his heart. As long as there's air in his lungs, we're going to keep rescuing churches. Because how many believe that the church matters in America? And so I'm going to talk about that at the end, a thing called church rescue that we do. America right now is closing three churches for every one that opens. How many think that something's got to happen about that? You can't let the churches keep closing. And so I'll talk about that at the end. We're rescuing what we call rescuing. We're rescuing hundreds of churches that are under 100, trying to get them over 100 and help them out. But I'll talk about that at the end. I just want to minister to you for a few minutes. We're going to talk about rewriting the script in a moment, which is obviously branded here and also up there. But we'll talk about that in a minute. A little bit more about me. I'm the founding pastor of South Hills Church, Assemblies of God Church in California. We've got 12 locations. I don't do a lot of the day-to-day anymore. Most of my time is wrapped up with Church Boom, the organization that rescues churches and coaches pastors. I have been married. More importantly, I have been married. This June 8th will be 35 years. And isn't that awesome? Oh, no, she's hot. And she's Mexican, so I call her my little hot tamale. And she didn't speak any English, but that helps us get along. So we've been married for 35 years, and I met her in the youth group. I was 14, she was 12, she became my girlfriend, and that was it. And so if you've got a 12-year-old, be careful, because you know you never know what's going to happen. Might want to check, make sure that 12-year-old kid has earning potential. We have two amazing children. We have three grandchildren, 5-year-old, 3-year-old, 9-month-old. How many grandparents do we have here? Come on, raise your hand up. How many know it's the most amazing thing on the planet, isn't it? Way better than parenting. It's God's gift to you for not killing your own kid. That's really what it is. I was holding my granddaughter a while back, and my adult son says to me, "Dad, it's like you love her more." I said, "No, it's not like I do. I do." You had a good run. It's over for you. If you got a Bible, go to Genesis. We're going to look at that. I want to minister to you for a few minutes, and then I want to turn the corner at the end, and then I want to be able to talk a little bit about rescuing churches. So let's jump right into it. I want to introduce you to a friend of mine up on the screen. His name is Cam. Say Cam with me. Come on.
Cam.
All right, Cam the man. So a few years back, I normally get a haircut in Southern California from the salon place where my wife gets her haircut. We kind of go together. But the lady that cuts my hair was gone. And I do a lot of traveling, about 180 flights a year. I travel all over America and raising money to rescue churches and all sorts of things. And I was about to leave on a trip. I wanted to get a haircut. The lady that normally cuts my hair was gone. So I went to a legit barber shop in Southern California called Shark Tank. Now, this place is cool. I don't know how else I'd say it, but they're just cool. Everybody in there is cool. It's a huge place, like 15, 20 barber chairs, and everybody in there is just cool, you know, they're all tatted up. You got African-American dudes like Cam, you got white guys, you got Hispanic, you got, you know, whatever, Asian, you got all sorts of different people in there, and they're all cutting hair, but they're all cool. Now, that you need to understand something about me, I'm not cool. And some of you are thinking, you didn't need to tell us. We see it. And I'm not cool. But they all, like, for whatever reason, like me. And every time I go in there, they all shake my hand a certain way, like, hey, man, how you doing? And I don't know what to do, if I'm supposed to bunt or what's happening. But literally, they're just, you know. So I'm like, hey, I don't know how to do that. And they make fun of me every time because I don't know what to do. So anyway, I go to get my haircut one day, and he tells me, hey, man. And I keep going back to him. Because I went there and I really liked him. We hit it off and I really felt like God wanted me to be in his life. So a couple months later, I keep getting my haircut from him. I go in there one day and he says, hey, he goes, when we're done with a haircut, man, let's go outside. I want to show you my new car. I said, all right, whatever. So he cuts my hair. Cam does. Afterwards, we go outside. We look at his new car. I don't know nothing about cars. It's a Dodge Challenger Demon. It's a $100,000 car. And the thing does 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. Mine does 0 to 60 in an hour and a half, so it's very different, the cars. But his is just lightning fast. So we get in the car, and all of a sudden, we're going down this street. It's a 35-mile-an-hour zone, and I'm not even kidding. I looked over at the speedometer. We're doing 120 in a 35-mile-an-hour zone. I'm freaking out. I'm scared to death. I'm buckled up. I'm hanging on. He's laughing the whole time because he knows he's scaring me. In addition, there's 19 speakers in his trunk. And it's got this reggae rap thing. Boom, boom, doom. I'm not a reggae rap guy. You don't need 19 speakers for a podcast. And so we're flying down the road. We're doing 120 miles an hour. The music's just cranking. You can feel it in your back, you know, and he's just cracking up. Then the light turns red, and he stops. The music's going. He's laughing. I can't even hear myself think because it's so loud. And I'm just hanging on like this. And all of a sudden, a car pulls up to us at the red light. And it's a husband and wife in a car, and they look over at me, and I recognize them. They're like, Pastor Chris, is that you? And I'm like, yeah, what's up? You know, and just trying to blend in, which there's no blending for me. So we go back, you know, and we keep getting my hair cut from him, and we become friends. So we go out to dinner one night, and he begins to tell me about his life. And he says, you know, I grew up in Atlanta, and when I was 13 years old, Cam tells me, he goes, I was running drugs. He goes, I was doing drugs, but I was also running drugs for my dad on my bicycle. And he says, man, he goes, and it's been part of my life ever since. Hooked on drugs, delivering drugs and all that. He's telling me all of this. And so I told him, I said, well, I'm actually a detective, so you're going to jail. No, I said, well, man, Cam, I go, wow, that's crazy. You know, I'm talking to him and stuff. And I said, Cam, I said, do you see the problem here? And he says, well, I know that's not good to do. I go, no. You're engaged to a woman that you want to get married to. I go, now let me understand this. Your dad did drugs, right? Did drugs, does drugs. He's in prison right now. Yes. You do drugs, and you've been in and out of jail more than your dad. Am I right? He goes, yeah. And I said, so he did it. You're doing it, and it's getting worse. I go, what do you think's going to happen when you have a son? What do you think he's going to do, Cam? And he said, well, I don't know. I go, he's going to do drugs, and it's going to get worse. I go, because it's just going to keep going like this. And I kind of drew out a little on a napkin. I drew out a little bit of a sketch. Put it on the screen for me. I drew out a little bit of a sketch. It's coming on the screen. There it is. All right. I drew out a little sketch, and I said, hey, look. I go, Cam, I go, look, man. I go, look at the red batons. I go, what about the red batons? Now, what are about the red batons that you see? They're getting what? They're getting darker. I go, Cam, I go, your dad had this baton of this is how we do life in our family. And now it's darker for you. Now you have the baton, and you're about to hand it to a possible son. And I go, and it's probably just going to get darker. And so on that day, I sat with Cam, and I just said, Tim, I go, there's a thing called generational cycle. Things kind of move along. I said, Cam, I go, there's three laws of what's called a family script. And I said, and I want to teach you those three laws. And I want to teach those three laws to you right now. All right? So get ready if you got a pen or a paper or whatever. And I want you to take some notes. Here's law number one of the family script. Come on, say it with me, the underlying words. The issue what? The issue? And it typically gets what?
Darker.
Okay. I said, Cam. I go, dude. I go, just pay attention, man. I go, the issue's traveling. There's you, and then it's going to your dad, and then it's going to you, and the issue's traveling, and it's getting darker. And he goes, I see what you're saying. And I go, and now the next one, I go, what's going to happen? That's the law of the family script. The issue travels, and it typically gets darker. Now, you might be sitting here thinking, oh, man, well, I'm not Cam. I don't do drugs. I don't deal with drugs. But how many would agree with me? We all got stuff. Come on, we all got stuff. There's something in all of us that isn't good. It's maybe the way we act or the way we behave, or we can't show love, or we don't forgive, or we're greedy, or we're jealous, or we're envious, or we lose our cool too quick. Whatever it is about us, okay, we got to understand, if we don't deal with it, it's just going to keep on getting darker. Okay, maybe you're not in the Cam boat. Maybe it's not drugs or whatever. Okay, but maybe it's one of these. Put it on the screen for me. These are just some examples. I already gave you a few examples. It's coming on the screen. There we are. All right. Fear, lying, avoiding conflict. Maybe yours is fear of commitment. Maybe yours is laziness, suppressing emotions, bad attitude. Maybe yours is greed, quick temper. Maybe yours is cheating, hard time forgiving people. Maybe yours is insecurity, unhealthy mindset. Maybe it's envy. I don't know what yours is, but here's what I want you to do. Okay, everybody in the house, everybody do this. Lock into the one or two things that you're like, that's not good about me. Maybe I got that from my parents, and maybe I'm transferring it onto my own kids. I don't know, but what are the one or two things you're like, that's not good. It's not good that I'm like that. That's not a good thing, and I need to fix it. So I want you to lock in on the one or two things. We know what it was for Cam. We already talked about that. What is it for you? Now, I want to introduce to you three characters in the Bible, okay? And they're always said together. Come on. You probably know them. Abraham, and what's the next word always said together? Abraham, Isaac, and what's the next guy?
Jacob.
All right, always said together. Now, here's the thing about these three guys. We're talking about a grandpa, a dad, and a son. Three generations. Now, what's interesting about these guys, they are heroes of the Bible. They did a lot of amazing things. But you know what's really interesting? You probably never picked up on? They have a secret issue in their family that just keeps traveling through the family. Abraham had it, Isaac had it, and it got worse. Jacob had it, and it really got worse. Even though they're amazing people in the Bible, just like you and I, they had issues. And I want to look at what their issues are. So let's go to the first guy, okay? Let's go to the first guy we're going to talk about, Abraham. Say Abraham with me. Come on.
Abraham.
Okay. Hebrews 11 says he's a hero in the Bible. He's the father of nations. Okay? Now, he's the only one that's got a song. You know the song. Father Abraham. Okay, some of you can't sing. Let's bring it to a close. The rocks are crying out outside. All right. Abraham, major dude, major in the Bible. Everybody loves the dude. He's the father of nations. He's the hero of the Bible. But he's got an issue. And that issue is going to travel through his family. Let's look at what the issue is. Maybe you've never seen it before. Genesis chapter 12, verse 11. As he was approaching the border of Egypt, Abram, we know later as Abraham, said to his wife Sarai, which is later Sarah, look, you're a beautiful woman. When the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Let's kill him, then we can have her. So please tell them, hold on now. Everybody, tell them you are my what?
Sister.
Come on. You are my what?
Sister.
Now that's important. We'll come back to that in a moment. That's an important part. Then they will spare my life and treat me well because of their interest in you. Now, here's the thing. It seems like a white lie, doesn't it? Okay, think about it for a moment. Hey, Abraham says to his wife, Sarah, hey, just tell everybody you're my sister, and that way they won't hurt you, and they won't hurt me. Folks, that just seems like a white lie. But here's what's interesting. Abraham never had to lie up to this point. Why did he feel like, okay, God's not going to bail us out, God's not going to take care of us, so if I don't lie, then we're going to be in trouble. He never had to lie up to this point. It doesn't say anywhere in the Bible that he ever lied. But for some reason, he saw the need to lie, and he lied about it. Then, you fast forward a few chapters later in Genesis 20, he does it again. He didn't lie. Help me out. He didn't lie just once. He lied what?
Twice.
You know what he did after he lied the second time? He lied the second time, and you know what he did? He made an excuse about it, which at least tells you he knew it was wrong. When you make an excuse, you usually know it's wrong. But he did it anyway. He lied not once. He lied twice. Now this is becoming a habit in his life. And now he's about to have a son named Isaac. And Abraham is going to learn the law of the family script number 2. Write this down. Put it on the screen for me. Here it is. What doesn't get repaired gets repeated. Whew, isn't that true? What doesn't get repaired as a mom or a dad or a grandma or a grandpa or as a kid, what doesn't get repaired will get repeated. It's going to happen. So Abraham lies not once but twice, makes an excuse about it. Now he has a son named Isaac. Let's look at what Isaac does. Isaac's a main guy, main character. Everybody loves this dude. Does a lot of cool stuff. Miracles happen through his life. However, look what happens in Isaac's life in Genesis 26, verse 7. Now, we're going to read this verse, but before we start reading it, I want you to see if there's any familiarity so far. Go when we read it, see if you can catch the familiarity. When the men who lived there asked Isaac, that's the second guy that we're talking about his wife Rebecca, hold on now, he said, she is my what?
Sister.
Okay, who else lied like that?
Abraham.
This is it, we'll get back to that. He was afraid to say she's my wife. He thought they will kill me to get to her because she is so beautiful. It's the same exact lie, man. Have you ever caught that in the Bible? It's like, wait a minute. Okay, watch this. Abraham lies. He says, tell everybody you're my sister. It's the first time he ever lied. Now, this is 25 years before Isaac's even born. And nowhere in the Bible does it say Abraham said, hey, Isaac, let me tell you how I lied one time. Isaac doesn't know about telling everybody that you're my sister. How did he pick it up? How did Isaac, 25 years before Abraham was, or before Isaac was born, Abraham lies and says, tell everybody you're my sister. Then Isaac comes along, does the same exact lie. Now, why and how is this possible? Put it on the screen for me. Because children learn patterns before they learn words. He lied about the same thing as his dad, Abraham, and didn't even know about it. They're exactly the same. Why is that, dads? Why is that, moms? Why is that, grandparents? Because children learn patterns before they learn words. And what doesn't get repaired gets repeated. Abraham didn't fix it. He lied not once, but twice. Made an excuse. You know what's interesting about Isaac when he lied? It doesn't say in Scripture he made an excuse. Abraham lied and at least tried to justify it because he knew it was wrong. Isaac comes along and lies and doesn't even try to justify it. It's almost like, yeah, that's just the way our family operates. It's just kind of the problem that we have. It's such an interesting thing. Children learn patterns before they learn words. I've learned that in my own life. You know, 2 years back, my son was coming home from college. He was going to be home later in the late afternoon. And so I went out and did business, did what I needed to do. I remember that day stopping at Chipotle for lunch. Do you guys have Chipotle here?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now what they makes me mad about them is they never give you enough meat. You ever notice that? They go like this. I'm like, come on, give it to me. But Chipotle, so I go stand in line. Now, the line, if you know anything about Chipotle, you stand here and you kind of go down and they make your burrito, your bowl, your whatever, your taco, quesadilla. And you say, I want this, I want this, I want this. And they're kind of making it for you as you kind of go down the line. Now, whenever, like, they run out of chicken, the line stops and they wait for the chicken to show up and then the line continues. They were running out of everything that day. I walk in and I'm way in the back of the line. Thought about leaving because there's so many people in line. And I was like, well, I'm here, I might as well stay. The line is moving so stinking slow, it's unreal. We finally get up to the counter and we start moving down, but then they run out of stuff. As they run out of stuff, I'm standing there just waiting and like, this is taking forever. The lady next to me, you know, late 30s, very beautiful lady, and she's standing next to me. And we're waiting for something, and she says, hey, how you doing? I looked at her and go, oh, how you doing, man? We're in line, so we may as well talk. So we start talking, and she's, you know, being really nice. We cut up. We laugh a little bit. We're still waiting for stuff. The line's taking forever. We're just standing next to each other, me and this lady, and she's nice. And then she even gets a little bit more nice and gets a little bit more friendly. And I'm thinking in my mind, this lady's flirting with me. Now, you need to understand why this is a big deal. No one flirts with me. Why are you laughing so hard, dude? That kind of hurts. Like, you really loved that joke, didn't you? No one flirts with me. Nobody. It never happens. I know what I am, and I know what I'm not. I'm not good looking. I'm not Pastor Nathan. Look at him. He's a portrait of fitness and beauty. He's the Kevin Costner of Graceland. You look at him and you just think Yellowstone. That's different. I'm standing in line and I'm thinking, she's flirting with me. It never happens for me. It is so never happened, like so wild, that while she's texting me, I'm literally texting my wife. Watch, she's talking to me. This lady's talking to me. I'm texting my wife. You'll never believe it. There's a lady flirting with me. My wife's response, no way. Impossible exclamation points. And I'm like, wow, really encouraging. So we keep moving down the line. Finally, we get to the little cash register. The little guy behind the cash register or whatever, he's like, okay. He looks at us. We're standing there. I got my meal, you know, and the Chipotle. And the guy looks at us and says, are you two together? Now, he means, are you two paying together? But she took it as, are you two together? So he says, are you two together? And this is her response. She goes, us? Him? No way. And I'm like, what the heck? You know? So I text my wife, false alarm, disregard, back to normal. So later on that day, I head home, and my son, I see him. I go into his room. Hey, I haven't seen him. I give him a big hug. He's home from college. And I give him a hug, and we're talking, and I look over his shoulder, and there's a hole in the wall. I said, son, I go, where'd that hole in the wall come from? It wasn't there early this morning. And he goes, oh, I was putting something up, and I got mad, and it wouldn't fit right, so I punched it. And I'm like, you come home from college, and you put holes in my wall. Is this how it works, you know? And so I'm like, what's wrong with you, you know? So I walk over, go into the other room, greet my wife, and I say, hey, I go, you see Aiden put a hole in the wall? I go, he's so impatient. And my wife looks at me, and she goes, and where did he get that from? I said, you got issues. No, she goes, where did he get that from? She's looking at me. I am impatient. I am insanely impatient. I know that I am. My son is even more impatient. My dad, he is the author of impatience. He died a couple of years ago. On his deathbed, he's like, this is taking too long. He's impatient. You know, I mean, crazy impatient. And it just kind of goes through the family. And I've learned with impatience and other issues in my life that I'm watching my son do, I'm realizing that what doesn't get repaired gets repeated. I'm noticing that children will pick up the pattern before they pick up my words. And I'm watching this thing in the generation. Now, let's go back to the story. Isaac. Isaac lies about the same exact thing as his dad. He's doing the same things his dad did. And now we find law of the family script number 3. Put it on the screen for me if we could. If you don't deal with it now, they'll deal with it next. Look, whatever thing you locked in your head that's like your issue, we all get issues. Whatever your issue is, if you don't deal with it now, they'll deal with it next. They being whoever comes up after you. You could be 80 years old and you're talking about your kids. You could be a 40-year-old talking about your little one, whatever it is. But if you don't deal with it now, they'll deal with it next. You got to deal with it at some point in your life. Now, let's talk about Jacob. Put Jacob up there for me. Okay, Jacob. Now, Abraham lied not once. Help me out. Abraham lied not once, but what? Twice. Made an excuse. At least he's kind of showing he knew he was wrong. Isaac comes along, lies, but doesn't even make an excuse. It's becoming a family pattern. It's becoming a family script. Now Jacob comes along, the third one in the generation. Isaac has a son, Jacob. Jacob's name, if you don't know this, in the Old Testament, not in the New Testament, there's a reason for it, long to explain. But in the Old Testament, the word Jacob actually means deceiver. Now, maybe you don't find the humor in things the way I do, because I find a lot of things funny. And I'm thinking, who names their kid deceiver? Think about that for a moment. Naming your kid deceiver. Let's say you're pregnant. You and your family were pregnant, and in a couple weeks you come to church on a Sunday, and Pastor Nathan's like, oh my God, you know, what a beautiful little boy. What did you name him? Could you imagine? Oh, this is deceiver, manipulative Johnson. 7 pounds, 2 ounces of pure deceit. Could you imagine? Like, that would be really weird, but they named him deceiver, and he was. Look at it. In Genesis, it won't come up on the screen, but Genesis 25, if you're taking notes, he lies to his brother to get ahead financially in Genesis 25. Genesis 27, 2 chapters later, he lies to his dad to get ahead financially. Okay, now here's what's happening for Jacob. Put it on the screen for me. Lying moves from being a symptom to being a strategy. Catch that? It's really, really interesting. Okay, because Abraham lies because he's afraid. Not once, but twice. Makes an excuse. Isaac lies. Doesn't even make an excuse. Now, this is because they're out of fear. It's a symptom in the family. But now, all of a sudden, Jacob realizes, this lying thing, I can get ahead financially. This isn't a symptom anymore. This is a strategy. And now, all of a sudden, it moves from just being a symptom to a strategy. Now, here's the good news. This is incredible news. Is that the past may describe you, but it doesn't have to define you. I don't know what your thing is or your two things is where it's like, man, I've got to deal with this in my life. But the past may describe you, but it doesn't have to define you. You can change. We can change. It can change. And we can change it for generations. My wife and I, we went through recently going through some boxes together, and we came across a gift I gave her for Christmas a few years ago. And in that box was this gift, you know. And now I love, you know anything about me? I love giving unique gifts. I don't like giving like, oh, here's a sweater, you know, like, or whatever. I like giving unique gifts. And so a few years ago, you know, I gave her this gift. I remember it was the first week of December, 3 weeks before Christmas. We're driving down the road a few years ago. She's sitting there. I'm driving. She looks at me and she goes, hey, Christmas is in 3 weeks. I said, yeah, I know. She goes, and she always does it. She goes, did you buy my gift yet? And I said, I have. I said, I bought your gift. She goes, it's 3 weeks before Christmas and you already bought it? And I said, yeah. I said, matter of fact, I said, I'll give you one better than that. I bought it December 26th of last year. She goes, you bought my gift December 26th of last year, the day after Christmas? I said, yeah, that's when the best sales are. You've got to be careful. And she goes, you really bought it. And then she goes on to say, how much did you spend? I go, you ask me every year. I said, but this time I'm going to tell you. I bought it December 26th of last year, and I paid $7 for it. And she goes, you have a gift from December 26th last year. You paid $7 for it. I said, yeah. She goes, what is this? I'm not going to tell you that. You'll learn on Christmas morning. Christmas morning rolls around. Everybody's there opening gifts, blah, blah. I give her my gift. She opens it up. It's two journals that I bought at Walgreens for $7. And what I did is I journaled one full page every day. And what I did was I wrote 365 days, one full year, 365 reasons why I love you. Now let me tell you what's happening in the room right now. All the women are going, and all the men are going, jerk. That perfume you got her doesn't look so good anymore, does it? Now, we kept looking through the box, and we came across this picture of us in the youth group. I didn't grow up in the youth group. I got invited there. I was 15 years old, went to the youth group. I gave my life to Jesus under Rich Gere's youth group. Superintendent, he was mentoring in Southern California. And I gave my life to Jesus. I got invited by a friend, and I gave my life to the Lord. My buddy in the youth group was Eddie Aberano. We were buddies. I noticed something, though. I was only been going to the church for about 6 months. I'd ride my bike to the youth group, ride my bike on Sunday morning. And I didn't grow up in a Christian home and all that. But I ride my bike there, and I noticed something about Eddie. Every time he would talk to his mom, Mrs. Amarino, they would say, I love you, to each other. Like if he was getting out of the car for youth group, she would say, I love you, Eddie. He'd say, I love you, Mom. Every time at church, if we were going to go sit with some friends, she'd say, I love you, Eddie. I love you, Mom. One Sunday, we're standing there. I've only been a Christian for about 6 months. I'm only 15 years old. And I'm standing there, and Eddie says, I got to go to the bathroom or something. And so it's just me and Mrs. Amarino, his mom. And I go, Mrs. Amarino, no one's around. I looked around. No one's there. I wanted to ask a question. I go, I have a question for you. She goes, okay, what is it? I said, I notice every time that you guys say goodbye to each other with Eddie, you say I love you. Why do you do that? And she caught it right away. She said, do you not hear that at home? I said, no. No one ever says that to us, ever. Now, my mom did later on in life, and my dad did much later on in life, and we repaired our relationship. But at the time, I said, no, my dad never said that. I ain't close. And she said, well, she said, I bet you, Chris, his dad never told him. And now he's never telling you. And she said, and she looked at, I was only 15. Well, what do I know? And she looked at me, she goes, if you don't change it, it's going to continue for years to come. You know what she was telling me to do? Come on, what was she telling me to do? To what? She basically told me, Chris, you better rewrite the script. And I'm going to tell you, at 15 years old, it was a dumb little kid, I don't know anything. At 15 years old, though, I remembered that. I got married. I began to tell my wife every day that I loved her. We had two kids. I told them every day that I loved them. My daughter has three kids. I hear her telling her kids every day how much she loves them. You know what it was? I'm not brilliant. I'm not smart. I was just a 15-year-old kid that was told by someone, you got to rewrite the script. And I decided at 15 years old, I was going to rewrite the script, and I changed it for generations. And you can do the same thing. You can change it for generations. I was only 15. I decided enough's enough. I didn't know anything, but I knew enough to know that I didn't want to do that anymore. And I changed it forever. And you can do the same exact thing. You can change it. Jacob did. Jacob changed it forever. He decided, let's take a quick look at it. We're running out of time. Here we go. Genesis 32, verse 24. This left Jacob all alone in the camp. And a man, we find out later is an angel, by the way, came in, wrestled with him, and the dawn began to break. When the man, the angel, saw that he would not win the match, he touched Jacob's hip and wrenched it out of socket. Then the man said, let me go. The dawn is breaking. But Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Now, what did the angel ask him in verse 27? Help me out. What is
your name?
Okay, no. I can't prove this theologically that I'm right. I'm just thinking out loud. It's an angel. The angel's asking Jacob, what's your name? Why does the angel ask Jacob, what's your name? Because in my opinion, the angel probably already knows his name. So just think out loud with me. If the angel knows his name, which I think is too much of a stretch, if the angel knows his name, then why does he say, what is your name? My opinion, because his name means deceiver. And I think the angel was looking at him and saying, Jacob? Because he's right in the middle of deceiving his brother. His brother was mad at him. I think he was looking at Jacob and saying, Jacob, I need you to admit to me right now you're a deceiver. You're never going to change until you own it, Jacob. You got to own this, man. You're a deceiver. See, because you know what Jacob could have did? What we all do. Hey, it ain't my fault I'm like this. Look at my dad. It ain't my fault I'm like this. Look at my mom. It ain't my fault. Look at my upbringing. It ain't my fault. You don't understand how I was abandoned. My dad left me. My mom left me. They abused me physically. Whatever. You don't understand. The way I am is because of this. The problem is this. Those that play the victim rarely get the victory. You can't play the victim. And he was looking at Jacob going, don't play victim with me. Just admit to me. And you got to own this thing. And then it goes on to say, he replies, my name's Jacob. Your name will no longer be Jacob, the man replied, the angel. From now on, you will be called Israel because you have fought and with God and with man and have won. Jacob meant deceiver, and Israel, he changed his name to Israel, which meant God rules in your life. You see what the angel did there? The angel wasn't speaking to his character. He was speaking to his calling. This is who you think you are. This is what everybody says you are. But you got something different. He made a change. And if you look at history and examine it, you'll see that his sons and his son's sons began to change. History started changing because he stood up one day and said, enough is enough. Now, understand something. Jacob's issue, his family, they lied. That's how they got out of trouble. And they lied. And that was a problem for years and years in their family. And Jacob changed it. A 15-year-old kid, a little punk kid, he decided, man, we don't say I love you in our family, and we got to change it. Let's go back. Put the picture up there, if you could, with me on the screen of Cam. There's my buddy Cam. Cam, with him, just a quick story. I gave him a Bible. And I began to talk to him a little bit about the Lord. And he ended up going to church. He ended up giving his life to the Lord. He just recently celebrated 5 years of being off drugs. 5 years. Not only that, Cam didn't even graduate high school. And yet I'm going to be going to his graduation soon because he's graduating with a bachelor's from a university. Isn't that awesome? You know what Cam did? Cam said, enough is enough. I'm going to rewrite the script. This is what, watch it. Jacob did it at age 60. I don't want to be a family of liars anymore. Rewrite the script. Cam did it at age 30. We're not going to be doing drugs. We're not going to be a family of addicts. We're going to rewrite the script. A 15-year-old punk did it. You're saying, man, I don't want to be a family that doesn't express love and affection to each other. We're going to rewrite the script. It is never too late. You're never too young. You're never too old to rewrite the script. Whatever thing in your life needs to be changed, change it. rewrite the script. Rewrite the script. Now the script I need to write, the script that you need to write, Pastor Nathan, or you need to write, they're different. My script's different. His problems are different than my problems. But there is a script that we all share. And it's the script of the American church. I'm not responsible for Nathan's things that he has to rewrite. He's not responsible for mine. But we are responsible as believers to rewrite the script for America's churches. We got to rewrite the script. Let me show you the script that's being written for America's churches. Put it on the screen for me. Churches in America closing at a record pace. Look at these crazy headlines all the last 12 months. Top left, October 2025, 15,000 churches could close this year amid religious shift in the United States. 15,000 folks, 15,000. That's 300 every Sunday. Okay, it's closing like crazy. Okay, U.S. decline in religion among the biggest in the world. Catch this, the biggest in the world, meaning of all the countries, in the world, the United States is decreasing in faith faster than any other country. Bottom left, churches fight to stay open. ABC News, as attendance dwindles. Bottom right, USA Today, churches are closing faster than new ones are opening in the United States. Folks, I don't know about you, but I hope you get passionate when you look at that and say, okay, those are some headlines, those are some scripts. How many would agree with me? We got to rewrite the script. We got to change this, man. And so what we did is, a few years ago, I got together, 5 years ago this August, I got together with a bunch of friends, and 15 of them in Dallas, Texas. I got in a room and I just like, hey man, we got to rewrite the script. It was 5 years ago, it was already bad. It's getting worse. And they said, well, what do we got to do, man? I said, we got to rescue churches. One of the pastors was like, well, what do you mean by that? I said, well, you ever seen Bar Rescue? None of the pastors wanted to admit it. Like, oh, no, I pray on that night. I'm like, you liars. And I go, like Bar Rescue, where they rescue the bar and make it a restaurant rescue. We got to do that with churches. So I said, what if we get churches under 100? And we start coaching them for free for a year. We'll pay the coaches, but they don't have to pay for it. So let's say that you got a church of 50 and you're struggling. We're going to coach you. We're going to pay the coach, but you don't have to pay for it. We're going to get you counseling if you need it. You're going to go on a four-day retreat to a beautiful resort. You don't have to pay for it. We'll pay for it. Because we're going to take your church of 30 or 40 or 50 and get it back over 100 and get it healthy again. We started that 5 years ago. And it has grown and grown. It's about 5,000 a church. Millions of dollars of every year that we're raising money. But I'm going to tell you right now, we're growing and growing. This month alone, we have 550 in the rescue initiative. 550 churches are crying out to get rescued, and we're helping to rescue them. We've been doing it for 5 years. And in a moment, Pastor is going to give you an opportunity to be a part of rescuing churches, part of the Kingdom Builders. I want to thank you in advance for helping us come to the rescue. Let me tell you two things. Number one, this thing's grown so fast, I told one of my mentors that, and he said, well, we need to rescue the bride. The groom pays attention. The groom's paying attention. And secondly, is we don't take a dime. We pay the coaches, the retreats and all that, but here's the thing. There's no admin costs. There's no overhead. If someone says to me, here's $10,000, $10,000 goes to rescue churches, not $8,000. We don't take any of it because we want all of it to rescue churches. I want to thank you for coming to the rescue. Thank you for being a part, Nathan, of Kingdom Builders. It means so much. And I want to thank you so much. I want to show you a video in just a moment. But before we do that, real quick, we're out of time. Real quick, grab your phone. Grab your phone. That's the thing you've been acting like you're taking notes on, but you're texting. And I want to give you this QR code. Put it on the screen for me. No, not that. I could lead worship, but the rocks will cry out. There we are. There's the QR code. It's a free digital book. You can get a hard copy. It'll tell you how to get the hard copy. You got to pay for shipping or something. But this is a free digital book. It's 11 stories written by 11 pastors who have been rescued. 11 stories written by 11 pastors that have been rescued. It will move your heart. We have rescued now thousands of churches with God's help leading the way, of course, but we're rescuing churches. We're doing all that we can. And this is his way of saying thank you for coming to the rescue. I want to show you a video right now of a church in Vermont. Vermont, listen, now this is important. Vermont is the least religious state in all 50 states. Vermont's the least. This church got down to 28 people. Probably going to close their doors. A little bit of debt. A little behind in payment. This morning, they probably had just slightly over 500. That's a church that, if they would have closed, we wouldn't have been able to reach those people. But I believe, and I hope you believe with me, rescue churches rescue people. And you know what it will do? My opinion, rescue churches will rescue America. I want to thank you all in advance for helping us rescue churches, partnering with us, and coming to the rescue. Check out this video, and then Pastor Nathan will come.
I called the representative of this church, and I just said, hey, listen, what's the vision there? And the response was this: man, we've been without vision for a long time. We're looking for someone to come in and essentially breathe life to this community. I mean, I think it was 3 days later, I was headed here. We walked in, we noticed like some friendly people, but just a few people. In fact, our first Sunday pastoring this church, there were 33 people. We did such an incredible job that first Sunday. The next Sunday, there were 28 people. And we knew that we had an uphill climb, but we absolutely knew that God had his hand on this place. We had a vision. We had just an incredible desire to see God do something huge. But there's a big difference between having a vision and having all these ideas and implementation. And that's something that Church Boom does an incredible job in coaching, is the implementation of the strategies and ideas and things and making them come to life and fruition.
God calls us to grow, and God doesn't just call us to comfort. And so moving here, it was definitely not a comfortable choice, but it was a choice of faith and growth. And sometimes with growth comes pain and challenge, but when God gives you the call, all of it is worth it.
We had got pregnant in September of 2022. So we were expecting a baby boy in 2023. He was diagnosed with a disease called CDH. He had two tiny little lungs. So so he didn't make it. Yeah, he didn't make it. The support that we had was huge. Because to be honest with you, going through that without the people that are like, without the people that we have and without our pastors, I don't know how we would have handled that.
It was nice to know that we could heal privately while being prayed for corporately at the same time. Yeah. Like we were given space to grieve together, but also we had so many community members and church family members that were grieving alongside with us and just taking care, really good care of us. And we've since welcomed two little girls, and they are very wonderful.
So one day, at the end of my rope, depression is at its worst, anxiety is at its worst, and all I'm thinking about is ending my life. So I'm driving around, and I work down the road, so I drove right past the church, and I thought to myself, maybe I should reach out to Vin. Something in my heart told me to reach out to Vinny, you know, because I was going home, I was going to get my gun, and I was gonna end it because I couldn't deal with it no more. The depression, the anxiety, just, it was so much that I couldn't take it. And so I messaged Pastor Vinny, and he replied, and he said, come down and see me. If it wasn't for him meeting you in this church, becoming what it is, then I wouldn't be here today.
I believe the Lord is continuing to use all the things we've learned from Church Boom and our continued partnership to really make a mark on Rutland, Vermont, and the entire state of Vermont. Both campuses, all campuses combined, including kids, we're a 500-person church. It's been an incredible journey so far, and it's just beginning.
Pastor Chris, for sharing an incredible message. Thank you, Chris. Very powerful. Thank you for the vision for Church Rescue. Thank you for being here. I want to invite you guys to pray with me. Two invitations today. One is, what is God saying to you today, and what are you going to do about it? What's the script he's calling you to rewrite? And I invite you, in the context of the gospel of Jesus, which makes all things new, to make a choice today that could change your life and the legacy of your family forever. I don't know what all the issues are, but you know what God is putting his finger on. So I invite you to plant a flag in the ground and say, God, by your grace, through your strength, through you making all things new, I say yes and amen to all your promises and a new rewritten script in Jesus' name. And I want to invite you to envision that, what your life will look like, what your kids' lives will look like, your grandkids. I also want to invite you to prayerfully consider how God may be calling you to be a part of church rescue. I work with pastors and churches that are struggling a lot. And I can tell you, it is a very tough battle. And churches don't close because they want to. They desperately want to figure out a way to move forward and reach people in their community. And I love this video because it reflects, we're not just talking about specific like local entities of churches. We're talking about the bride of Christ flourishing so that people can be reached with the good news of Jesus. It changes lives, it saves lives, restores families and relationships, changes eternities for people. And I'm thankful for my friend Chris that God has called with the gifts that God has given him to do something about this. And God has called us as a church to take them on as a new kingdom builder partner. So we're going to prayerfully respond about rewriting our own script today as we sing this song, but we're also going to respond in obedience to God, however he's calling you, to both pray and give. And I want to remind you, $10 makes a difference. We're going to give you a new Kingdom Builder partner that we're going to highlight every single month, and we're going to take an offering every month in the existence of this church, Lord willing. And it doesn't mean you got to give big every time. Maybe you will sometimes, but I would encourage you prayerfully consider giving every time, and even $10 makes a big difference. Some of the money God has given to all of us is to flow through us to the purposes of heaven on earth.